But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? 1 John 3:17. Hi, I'm Rob West. Christians are called to help the poor, and studies consistently show that we're generous people compared to the whole. But does that generosity always mean we're helping? I'll talk with Brian Ficker today about that. Then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, our guest today is Brian Fickert, professor of economics and community development and the founder and president of the Chalmers Center for Economic Development at Covenant College. He's also co-author of the best-selling book, When Helping Hurts, How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor and Yourself. Brian, great to have you on the program today.
It's great to be with you today, Rob.
Brian, it's pretty obvious that money alone doesn't solve the problem of poverty. It's certainly more complex than that. So how do we need to change our thinking about poverty?
You know, it really comes down to this. What is a human being? Many of us think of the human being as fundamentally a physical creature. And so we think if we pour in more resources, the person will be better off. And then many of us as Christians think of a person as kind of a body that contains a soul.
Yes.
And so we just pour in resources to kind of give people their best life now. But what the Bible actually teaches is that the human being is a highly integrated body, soul, relational creature. We are hardwired for relationships with God, with ourselves, with others, and with the rest of creation. And once we think of people as these highly integrated body-soul relational things, suddenly we realize that we're going to have to work with people in highly relational ways because that's how they're wired.
Oh, wow. I love that. It's a whole different paradigm, and yet it does have profound implications for how we help those who are hurting. Well, Brian, one chapter in your book says that not all poverty is created equal. Let's talk about that. Are there actually different kinds of poverty?
Certainly. You know, when we see a person who's homeless standing on the street corner, we see a person who's lacking in adequate food and clothing and shelter.
Yeah.
But then imagine a person who's in Indonesia after the tsunami.
Yeah.
That person's also experiencing a lack of food, clothing, and shelter. But I think we know the underlying conditions in those two situations are completely different. So we have to diagnose what are the underlying causes contributing to that manifestation of a lack of things. And so what we want to do is distinguish between people who need relief or rehab or development. Relief is appropriate intervention if there's a crisis, if the person is completely unable to help themselves. And so after a tsunami, relief is the right intervention.
Yes.
But once the bleeding has stopped, so to speak, once the person is able to contribute to their own betterment, we then want to work in a more rehabilitative kind of way, walking with them. We want to move away from doing things to people and for people and to start doing things with people, asking them to use their gifts and their abilities to improve their own situations. And we want to do that not because we're stingy or uptight, but because we want to restore them as image bearers, as people who live in right relationship with creation. That means stewarding their own gifts and resources. And so we move away from just handouts to a rehab approach where we're walking with them. And then the final stage is development, which is really helping people to move well beyond any conditions they've ever experienced before. And that's a very long-term process in which both they and we grow more and more into the image of Christ.
Oh, that's so helpful. And I love those categories because that will really inform then how we respond in each of these situations. We'll get into some practical examples of that just around the corner. Brian, about 45 seconds until our first break. Talk to us about economic development and its relationship to poverty specifically. We tend to think that's always the solution. Is that the case?
Well, economic development is part of the story. We want to restore people, again, as image bearers, people who can use their own gifts to work and to enjoy the fruits of that work, and then to share with others. And so economic development is just that, helping people to be able to work. But we want to avoid the story of economic development in Western civilization. That story is a story of the American dream, of earning more to consume more. It's a highly self-centered, highly individualistic story that's not doing any of us any good.
We'll continue to unpack that just around the corner, and also some practical help for you as you serve those in need. We'll be right back with Brian Ficker. Stay with us.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Jesus loved the little children. It's an old children's song, but it speaks a deep and profound truth. Jesus truly did love the children, and it goes deeper than just thinking they were cute or fun to play with. He told his disciples once, "Become like a child, have faith like a child, because the kingdom of the Lord belongs to people like children. They are vulnerable, needy, dependent." These are words that should describe all of us as we come to Christ by faith, in need of his mercy, dependent on his love, vulnerable to the sufferings and the sins of the world, trusting in the Lord Jesus to bring healing and hope. Become like children and enter the kingdom of Christ. Read God's Word daily. Visit getanchor.com.
My name is Kent, and I'm a member of Christian Healthcare Ministries. I have a friend who actually has great insurance, and she recently had a life-threatening experience. And she was laying in the hospital bed afraid, not afraid for her life, but afraid of what her insurance would or would not cover. And as a CHM member, I can honestly say I just never have that fear. I can't tell you the peace of mind that provides.
Learn more about Christian Healthcare Ministries biblical cost sharing at chministries.org.
Jenna Ellis in the morning.
You need to be very concerned about what your children are being exposed to if they go to a public school, or even if they go to a Christian school. Parents are not just allowed, they have a constitutionally protected fundamental right that is God-given to direct the education, well-being, and faith options of their children.
Jenna Ellis in the morning, weekdays at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from LitePoint Portfolios, which seeks out family and faith-friendly investments for 401k and 403b plans, integrating faith values and fiduciary duty. LitePoint Portfolios offers retirement plans for a variety of organizations such as businesses, nonprofits, and churches. And we're grateful for their sponsorship of the Faith and Finance Program. More information is available at LitePointPortfolios.com.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Delighted to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Joining me today, Brian Fickert, Professor of Economics and Community Development and the founder and president of the Chalmer Center for Economic Development at Covenant College. We're talking today about his best-selling book, When Helping Hurts, How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor and Yourself. Brian, before the break, you were really helping us understand the different approaches to helping those in need, whether that's relief or rehab or development. I'd love for you, as we talk about this idea of when helping hurts, to give us an example or two when, perhaps without even knowing it, we can actually hurt more than help through our giving.
Well, an example that many of us are familiar with is that homeless person who's standing on the street corner. We can reach into our pocket and pull out a quarter and put that quarter in that person's hand. But I think deep down we know that all we've really done is enable that person to continue in that situation. And so we want to be compassionate. We want to pour ourselves out on behalf of the hungry. But sometimes simply treating symptoms rather than the underlying causes can do a lot of harm, and that's often what happens when we're dealing with homeless people. We've got to use a more relational approach, because the fact that they're standing there is rooted in something deeper, some broken relationship with God, self, others, or creation. We've got to get to the underlying conditions and stop treating the symptoms.
So what would be an example of how to actually turn that situation to a positive where God can work? How would you advise that person who genuinely wants to help the person they're encountering on the street?
Yeah, it's that particular instance is a very hard one, because typically people who are homeless are dealing with deep brokenness in their relationships with others.
Yes.
And that often is characterized by a high degree of mistrust. And so it takes a lot of time to get to know the person and for them to start to trust you. Some experts on homelessness would say you need 70 to 80 touches. Mm-hmm. That means conversations with a homeless person before you can even get to the point where you can start to think about positive changes. And so that's a very hard one. Let's think of a different one. Imagine a woman walks into your church asking for help with her electric bill. Well, you know that lack of ability to pay the electric bill is a symptom of something deeper. So what you want to do is change the conversation away from simply providing something to her into a direction that says, what are your gifts? What are your abilities? How can we help you use your gifts and your abilities to achieve your goals? What obstacles are you facing in achieving those goals? How can we come alongside of you and help you get over those obstacles so that you can be more of who God has created you to be? And so it's moving away from a transaction to a long-term relationship, because God is a relational God, and He uses relationships to restore us to all that it means to be image bearers.
Oh, that's powerful. Let's think of an example, Brian, a little further away from home. Obviously, many of us want to be able to help in remote places in third world countries. You know, we get at Christmas time the catalogs from a lot of different organizations where we could perhaps send a goat or an animal or something else that might be life-giving or even provide some ongoing financial support for this person if they can, you know, have eggs to sell. Does that work? And what other considerations might we bring into play as we think about helping those much further away?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, not all Christmas catalogs are created equal, but basically we want to help people to build their assets, build their own gifts and their own resources. And so things like goats or other kinds of things that build income-generating assets can be a really great way to help people. Chickens can be a great way. People view the goats and the chickens as assets that can generate income, and so that can be an approach. Another approach is something called microfinance, which provides essentially banking services for very poor people so they can save and borrow money to increase their ability to start small businesses, to put their kids in school, to pay for emergencies. And so there's ways to build local capacity, local assets that are very empowering. So we should be looking for those things, not just things that are constantly just giving handouts of consumer items.
Yeah, I love the microfinance idea. For those listening today, Brian, that have a bit more surplus, maybe God's given them an abundance and they want to learn more about how to do that, any resources you might point them to learn about these opportunities that are really working and meeting needs?
Well, at the risk of sounding like a commercial, the Chalmers Center's website is full of resources to help your listeners to steward their financial resources both at home and abroad.
That's great. Give the URL. We'll give it at least one more time before we're done. But where can they go?
It's just www.chalmers.org. www.chalmers.org. And there's plenty of resources there, books, courses, curricula, to help you minister more effectively both at home and abroad.
Brian, a lot of folks think of the short-term mission trips that are going on, especially this summer, with a lot of churches around the country. Anything we need to know about there, about making that something that really is helpful?
Well, we actually have a book called Helping Without Hurting in Short-Term Missions, because we actually believe short-term trips can do a lot of harm. We often perpetuate the very things that we criticize the federal government for. We rush in, we hurl around resources, and then we leave. And we think that's a small thing, but our trip is just one of a series of trips really waves and yes. waves of short-term trips that often dispense resources in ways that further mar the identity of the poor. Many poor people around the world have a sense of shame, a sense of incapacity, a sense that they can't affect change in their environments. And so we exacerbate those feelings by rushing in, taking over, and hurling out resources. And so we've got to use a different approach. There is a role for short-term trips, but it's typically a backstage role. It's typically supporting and encouraging the organizations that are there over the long haul. They're the primary manifestation of Jesus Christ in those communities.
I love that. Perhaps you want to check out this resource at the Chalmers Center for how you can point your church in the right direction on how to use short-term missions effectively. Brian, just a minute and a half left. I love stories. Perhaps you can finish with an example or a success story of the right kind of help.
I'd love to share a story from Togo. Togo is a very small country in West Africa, and Togo is one of the poorest countries in the entire world. It's actually the center of witchcraft and voodoo. And we were working with a very, very, very poor church there in a very rural part of Togo. They were about an hour drive off of the paved road. And we said to that local church, how could you use your own gifts, your own resources to be what God has called you to be, the body and bride and fullness of Jesus Christ in that community? And so they decided to repair the road. The road was full of potholes from the rains. They went out and started to repair the road. Pretty soon the whole community came out and said, what are you doing here? And they said, we serve a king who'd like us to take care of his world. Our God is the owner of everything, and he wants us to steward his resources. So we're repairing the road to take care of his world. The whole community came out and joined them. Wow. There was a witch doctor from a neighboring village who saw what was happening. He said to that church, I will give you land if you will plant a church like this one in my village, because I want my village to serve the same God that you serve.
Wow, that's incredible. Man, what a powerful example. Well, Brian, we've just scratched the surface. Will you come back sometime and join us again?
I would love that, Rob. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being with us. That was Brian Ficker today with the Chalmers Center and the author of the book, When Helping Hurts. If you'd like to learn more about the great work of Brian and his team at the Chalmers Center, you can go to chalmers.org. That's chalmers.org. Back with much more just around the corner. We'll be right back.
Friendships is offering an exciting opportunity for young adults who want to grow in their walk with God, become physically fit, and learn relief ministry while serving in the Middle East. This is an amazing opportunity to serve God and experience Israel. Check out Seahawk's one-year scholarship program at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022. That's 337-433-5022. The next session begins August 19th.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
Forget about Facebook.
The last 10 days we've been banned twice, and is unbanning a word?
They put us under the ban. Christians and conservatives
don't need you, YouTube.
Banned one day, banned again.
AFR programs are now live streaming on the AFA streaming app. Now you can get shows like Today's Issues straight from the source.
Put back on the next.
Just say unbanned.
Unbanned.
Just search AFA streaming or visit streaming.afa.net to sign up.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Here's Rob West of Faith and Finance, heard here daily on American Family Radio.
We understand how important it is for Christians to leave a legacy that will impact generations to come. One way you can do that is through a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345. Or visit them online at afafoundation.net.
Are you struggling to fit your faith into your practice as a Christian financial advisor? The Certified Kingdom Advisor designation teaches you a step-by-step process to confidently deliver advice that aligns with Christian values. Discover the skills you need to help your clients make a kingdom impact. Get started today by enrolling in the CKA educational program at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified. That's kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. It's time to take your calls and questions today on anything financial. We'd love to hear from you. 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. Give us a call. Let's dive in today. We're going to head to Florida and welcome John to the broadcast. John, how can I help you, sir?
Hey, Rob. How you doing, sir? Greetings from North Florida. I listen to y'all Monday through Friday on WAFT 101.1 FM in Valdosta. Thank you so much for everything you do. Rob,
excellent.
I've got one question, please.
Yes, sir.
In your opinion, sir, let me preface this, if I may, by saying that I'm on disability, a very limited income. In your opinion, are extended car warranties, i.e. those that you see advertised on television, Car Shield, Endurance, and there are a number of others. In your opinion, brother, are those a good idea, or do you like the idea of building an emergency fund even better? And I'll stand by for your answer.
Yeah, John, it's a great question. You know, my typical approach to this is to build up that emergency fund. Of course, every household needs one in case of an unexpected expense, and the unexpected seems to always occur. And so I would love for you to have that fund that you're building up over time that you could use to tap if you need that major repair. And then obviously that money is there for other needs if this, doesn't happen. In the sense that, you know, the extended car warranties, I mean, my biggest issues with them, number one, is that not everything is covered, so they may not recover, cover the issue that you have going on. Some include a depreciation clause, which reduces the amount paid for repairs based on the mileage. It may restrict your repair options, so you have to, in some cases, go to a particular place to get your vehicle serviced. They can be expensive. You just got this a couple of issues here, and even coverage could be denied in some cases if you don't keep records of recommended maintenance, things like that. And then often you'll have a deductible too. So I think, kind of given all of that, I mean, certainly if you can afford it and you read the fine print and it can cover the major issues and give you a little bit more peace of mind, and you're driving a high mileage car that is still within the range of the warranty, that's one thing. But I think for most folks, with the median price being around $2,500, that just tends to be a pretty major expense, and you could have that covered through an emergency fund, which would be my preferred approach.
And I totally agree with you. The plans that I've looked at are very expensive. And so that makes perfect sense. I do have another question.
Yes, sir.
It would be more appropriate if I did. Well, I'm just trying to discern here whether it would be more appropriate if I did it off air. The question is simply this. I am trying to get a hold on my financial picture. I live alone. I love what one of the guests said not long ago on air. He or she said that the goal is to give every dollar a name. Rob, I absolutely love that, and that's what I'm trying to do, but I am not that computer savvy, and what I would like to ask the ministry to consider if there may be a money coach that I could talk to over the phone.
Yeah. Well, we'd be delighted to do that, John. So we have a team, and that team is growing, of certified Christian financial counselors And many of them do this as a ministry. Some do this as their primary occupation. Different from a certified kingdom advisor that's offering investments and financial planning and estate planning and tax preparation, the Christian financial counselors are really on the spending plans, the debt repayment, helping you work through any issues in communication between husband and wife. I mean, that is kind of their sweet spot, if you will. And listen, John, we'd be delighted to offer that to you just as our gift to you, a few sessions with a certified Christian financial counselor who can meet with you over the phone, help you get that budget set up in a way that makes sense for you. It doesn't have to be tech driven, but I love the idea and affirm this notion that you would give every dollar a name. So you have a plan, you know where it's going. You might need to make some course corrections along the way, but you at least have a well thought out budget that has some margin built into it where you've covered all of your both fixed and discretionary expenses on a monthly basis, and it'll give you a lot of peace of mind in the process. So if you hold the line, John, we'll get your information, and I'll get one of our counselors in touch with you. Does that sound good?
That sounds good. And finally, I would like to say I was in Gainesville, Georgia, in the late 1980s, early 1990s. I felt led to stop in at what was then called Christian Financial Concepts.
Yes, sir.
Sat on, in on an afternoon show. And after that show, I had the privilege of meeting Mr. Larry Burkett.
Oh,
so
wow.
Thank y'all for what you what you do. At now it's called Faith and Finance. I love the name of the ministry now. Thank you, Rob, for your wealth of knowledge and all of your team there at Faith and Finance, sir.
Well, we're grateful that you called that out today. The late Larry Burkett was a giant of the faith, and his kind heart and biblical focus was something that countless folks have been impacted by, and there's not a week that goes by that somebody doesn't mention Larry's name. So I appreciate you calling that out. By the way, Robert, who's serving on our team today, reminded me that 20 years ago on the 4th of July is when Larry went home to be with the Lord. So we're just days away from that fourth anniversary of Larry's home going. And again, just incredible the impact that he had and that the Lord allowed him to have. And so many of you listening to my voice right now were impacted by him. We're now getting calls from folks saying, I was in the back of the station wagon with my mom listening as we drove around town. And now I'm benefiting from that as I put it to practice in my own financial life. What a joy to see a life well lived and somebody that the Lord has used in incredible ways, the late Larry Burkett. John, thanks for your call today, my friend. We appreciate you being on the program. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your questions. We've got lines open right now for whatever you'd like to talk about today, financially speaking. 800-525-7000. Call right now, and we'll be right back.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
What do we do when people mistreat us? How do we respond? If we listen to the voices of the world around us, we will be no different than they are. God seems to have a different plan.
Dr. David Jeremiah continues his series, The Tender Warrior, next time on Turning Point.
5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
When we follow Jesus, the things of this world grow strangely dim. We focus less on ourselves and more on God's kingdom.
In Michael Blue's book, Free to Follow, we're reminded to surrender everything to Jesus and follow Him. Free to Follow explores what the Bible says about money and possessions and challenges you to rethink the way you view and use them. Request a copy of Free to Follow with your gift of any amount to faithfi.com/follow.
Hi, this is Todd Nettleton with the Voice of the Martyrs Radio, inviting you to join us Friday, July 14th for the Hearts of Fire virtual event. You'll meet four courageous women who showed incredible commitment to Christ in the face of intense persecution. This special event is free. Hear these inspiring testimonies of costly faith, plus worship led by Michael W. Smith. You can watch from wherever you are. Register online at heartsevent.com.
Hey, Greg, I need some advice.
Oh, what's up?
I'm really struggling with finding ways to cut back. With costs going up, especially in healthcare, what do you guys do?
We use CHM, Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's a health cost sharing ministry that's been sharing members' eligible medical bills for over 40 years. Sure helped us stick to our budget. And here's the website, chministries.org. chministries.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions with a few lines open, 800-525-7000. This is the program where we apply God's wisdom to your financial decisions and choices, recognizing that our financial journey is one of the key ways God shapes our spiritual journey. You remember where Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So our heart follows our money. If you will, our money management, the allocation of God's resources, tells a picture or paints a picture of what's most important to us, where we, what we value, where we've placed our trust. And ultimately, as we surrender everything to the Lord, holding it loosely, giving it generously, aligning our hearts with the Master's, because that's what a steward does as we allocate his resources, well, it draws us into a more intimate relationship with him, allowing us to fix our eyes on the eternal, not the temporal. That's what we want to do here each day on this program, as we encourage and equip you to make decisions rooted in biblical truth. So if you have a financial question today, we'd love to tackle it with you. 800-525-7000. Before we head back to the phones, before the break, John was asking about extended car warranties. Here's just a bit more information. You know, as you think about these extended car warranties, first of all, they're not warranties under federal regulation, so they lack some of the protections of true warranties. They're technically vehicle service contracts, an agreement to repair a vehicle during a certain period. You can buy extended warranties from auto dealers, of course, vehicle manufacturers, and independent companies. Dealers often suggest if you are going to buy one, you buy it when you buy the car, but of course you can buy one at any time. There's really two types. There's the exclusionary extended warranties, where they cover everything except the parts listed as specifically excluded. And then there's inclusionary warranties, where it covers only the parts named in the contract. So some only cover the powertrain. Others cover bumper-to-bumper coverage. They sometimes cover even vehicle maintenance, including oil changes. The cost can really vary widely, along with the warranty length and the vehicle predicted reliability and other factors play into that. So you've got to really read the fine print. They can be expensive. As I shared with John, the average price of an extended warranty right now is running about $2,500. How does that compare, though, against car repairs? Well, the average outlay for a repair after a check engine light appears, studies say, according to CarMD in 2021, that's going to run you between $350 and $425 on average. Now, it can get major if you need to replace a transmission. We're talking $6,000 plus. So you just have to really look at it and see, number one, what type of warranty am I getting? What does it cover? can I cover this out of my emergency fund and get rid of this expense? Or if not, do I really need this? Do I drive cars into the ground? That may be a reason to go ahead and get it because it gives you the peace of mind. Are you in a situation where you don't have that margin to fall back on? That may be another reason to get it. But if you can do it out of your emergency fund, that would be my preference, just because so often folks find that the coverage they think they're getting doesn't actually cover everything they think, or through that deductible and limited repair options, they just aren't satisfied with what they're getting. That's typically what you'll find on Consumer Reports. So you just need to be thoughtful about it and really do your homework before you make that final decision. All right, let's head back to the phones. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. To Ohio we go. Hi, Sharon. How can I help you?
Good morning. Good morning. Yes, I was trying to pre-plan my funeral and making up the will. And the thing is, I want to give a larger percentage to my daughter, who is a single mother, than my son, who is a very good businessman. So the thing is, my son lives in Boston, but my daughter lives in Japan, and I don't think she has her American citizenship anymore. And that sounds like it could be a problem. So I had asked my sister if I could, you know, will it to her and then have her pass it on to my daughter. But my agent was telling me that you can't send money to, he said that if I had, say, $150,000 to give to her, my sister might have to pay like $30,000 taxes out of that. Yeah. And also that if it could affect her future, say, Medicare or benefits, Social Security benefits. So I wouldn't want to put an extra burden on her just because she was just a go-between for my money for my daughter.
Yes, very good. Well, first of all, a person's nationality has nothing to do with whether or not they're qualified to be a beneficiary of a will or even a retirement account or life insurance policy. So you can, there's really no difference from leaving assets to someone in the U.S. versus out. So you would just simply name your daughter in your will or your trust or as a beneficiary of your retirement or investment accounts that permit the naming of a beneficiary. You may want to make that personal representative someone who is in the United States, so maybe your son, just so they can handle all of that. Never a bad idea to talk to an estate planning attorney just as you put all of this together, so you can also have a durable power of attorney. If you needed a trust, that would be a great opportunity to do that as well, because then that the trustee could handle the trust according to the trust documents and avoid probate. And then if you become incapacitated or after your death, for the benefit, in this case, of your family member, could ensure that the assets are passed appropriately. But there's no reason, because she's a non-resident, non-citizen, she can't be the beneficiary of any of your assets.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want to go through my son because I want to give her a larger share, and he and his wife would be quite upset with me. Not that I would be around to incur their wrath, but still, I don't want to create bad feelings between the siblings.
Yeah, well, the challenge is, it's going to happen at some point. So, you have an option here. You either talk about it in advance or you let them kind of deal with it and find out after the fact. I always encourage, and obviously I don't know all the circumstances here, so you need to pray and think through how you want to approach that. I encourage you to kind of deal with it up front and have that conversation on the front end. But certainly if you decide not to, I think the key is make sure you designate that personal representative in your trust. In your will, if you want a trust, you would name a trustee. That could be both an individual, a family member, or friend that's trusted, or it could be a corporate trustee if you'd prefer to go that route. But the bottom line is there's not going to be any issue with your daughter being out of the country. So at the end of the day, you probably want to visit with a godly estate planning attorney who can help you navigate all of this. That would go a long way to helping you make sure you're well planned. You've got all the necessary documents in place, both for your health decisions at the end of life life, you know, living will, but also making sure that your assets and personal items are going to pass according to your wishes, and that's really the key. So if you don't have a godly estate attorney, you could contact a certified kingdom advisor in your area. You'd find one at faithfi.com. Just click Find a CKA. They could make a referral to you. I also want to give you a gift, Sharon. The book Splitting Heirs is the best book, in my opinion, on this topic. Not the mechanics of estate planning, but the questions to ask, the decisions to make, including the talk decision, which is how you communicate with your heirs prior to your death. It's by my good friend and mentor, Ron Blue. If you stay on the line, we'll get your information and get that right out to you. It's called Splitting Heirs, and it's our gift to you. Peggy, Rhonda, Donald, coming your way after the break. Stay with us.
Do you want to prepare for God's calling on your life to ministry? Many people have a sense that God is calling them to ministry, but they don't know the next step to take. Here's a step that may be for you. Wesley Biblical Seminary offers a new Bachelor of Arts in Christian Ministry that's entirely online, and it will prepare you for whatever ministry God calls you to next. We want to equip you with knowledge and tools you need to confidently fulfill the calling that God has put on your life. Learn more at wbs.edu. That's wbs.edu.
What do normal human beings want for a six-year-old?
Bishop E.W. Jackson.
To be loved, to be protected, to be shielded from some of the ugliness in the world. But you got these nutcases who want to push on a six-year-old that you are inherently evil because of the color of your skin.
Tune in to The Awakening, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
45,000. That's how many times FaithFi referred a listener to a certified kingdom advisor last year. And for good reason. These are trusted financial, legal, and accounting professionals who have completed a rigorous certification program to ensure biblically wise financial advice as part of their practice. You can find a local CKA professional in your area by going to faithfi.com and clicking on the Find a CKA button on the homepage.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. We've got some great questions coming up, and room for maybe one more at 800-525-7000. Let's head back to the phones. Rhonda is in Maryland. Go right ahead.
Hi. Okay, so I have just a few questions. My son and his wife just recently sold a house. They profited about $100,000, put that in a money market, and moved in with his in-laws so they could save some money. With the interest rates being like they are right now, they wanted to wait to see what was going to happen. And they just actually got presented with an opportunity where they could do a rent-to-own of a house that we're going to assume is going to appraise maybe about $500,000. The guy's asking, it's going to be around $375,000. And the question is first of all, like, how is this going to benefit the seller if he's wanting to rent to own? He showed in his statement he's just really wanting the house payment, $2,200 a month for rent, saying that the principal that he's paying is going to go towards the purchase price at the end of the 3 years. So we're going to assume maybe around $28,000 would come off the purchase price. So how's that benefiting him, first of all? And then second of all, my son had put his money into a money market, which is earning like 5% interest. And he was thinking, should we pay like a year upfront rent and, you know, replenish his money market monthly with the rent that they would be paying to him? Or would it be better to pay the monthly rent? Of course, they can, you know, they can buy the purchase house anytime they want. So obviously looking at maybe hopefully the interest rates would drop. And they could do that at any time. They could, you know, anytime they wanted to do that, I guess they could during that 3 year period. So just not sure exactly what's the best approach to do, if this seems like a good thing or not.
Yeah.
I guess that's
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Rhonda, and I appreciate that. As to your initial question as to the benefit to the seller, there really is none unless he's keeping a portion of the rent. And typically with one of these rent-to-own options, only a portion of the monthly rent payment goes toward the purchase price or the down payment. And so there'd be a portion that would be kept just as rental income. So it's a way for him to generate some income and then ultimately sell the property. There's two types of rent-to-own contracts. There's the lease option where you have the option to buy the home, but if you want to, but you're under no legal obligation to do so, you could walk away after the lease is up if you change your mind. And then there's the lease purchase where you'd be legally obligated to purchase the home at the end of the lease agreement. And if you walk away from the deal or you can't afford it or qualify for a mortgage, you could be in for a legal battle. Oftentimes the rental payment on these is, 10 to 15% higher than the average for your market because, again, only a portion of that rental payment is going toward the down payment. And then you've got to understand whether you're responsible for property maintenance while renting, because often the contract will specify that you are. And if that's the case, then, you're missing out on one of the benefits of renting, which is, you don't have to, typically when you're renting, the owner is responsible for the maintenance. But in this case, you could be, responsible for pretty costly repairs if the AC goes out or there's an issue with the roof, something like that. Why are they doing this? Are they just trying to wait out the drop in interest rates, or is it because of a credit issue, or they just don't have enough of the down payment? Why not just buy it today?
Well, they have the $100,000 in the money market, and they were going to use that, obviously, and he thought until, because the interest rates are a little high, they're okay with where they're staying right now and trying to save some money. And this is just such a good opportunity because the house, it's going to be around $500,000. And this guy is selling it. I mean, he is quite wealthy. He doesn't really care about the house. He hasn't been back to it for about 7 years, I think, or something like that. So it's kind of like not an issue really with him, which sounds weird, but that seems to be the case. And so he was saying $800 was going to go towards the purchase price, $800 a month. He's going to charge him $2,200. I think his balance that he owed, he showed him was like $290,000. So that's why, he's like, okay, it just doesn't seem, it's almost too good to be true. But yet, I don't know. I mean, do you think they should just go ahead with purchasing the house right now with the interest rates being what they are, or should they wait?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good question. The downside here is that they're going to pay $2,200 a month and only $800 is going to go toward the ultimate purchase. So that's $1,400 that he's keeping. And obviously, if he's wealthy, then he doesn't need that. I think the question number one is that truly the market value that he's placing on it? Just because he says it is doesn't mean it is. So I'd probably want to get an appraisal and make sure that he is, doing this out of the goodness of his heart, because obviously it's still a very strong real estate market. He could put this on the market, and if he prices it right, he could sell it very quickly and walk away with the full proceeds after he pays the mortgage. So he's delaying that for some reason, either because he has a personal relationship with him, wants to help them out, B, doesn't need the money. And as you said, that may very well be the case. Now, he's obviously pocketing $1,400 a month. And then if it's, this is ultimately a lease purchase, then he's, they're obligating themselves to buy this at a certain price down the road, regardless of what happens with the economy and housing prices, which means they could be overpaying at some point. It's not my favorite approach. Do you know if it's a lease purchase or a lease option?
It's going to be, they're not going to be obligated.
They're not. Okay. So I would make sure you get I would get a real estate attorney to look at the contract just to make sure that it is in fact a lease option. But if it benefits them to wait, that's great. I mean, the other option is they go ahead and get the house now. We would typically recommend on a $500,000 home that they have, they always would want a 20% down payment. They've got that with $100,000 to put down, the money that's in money market. The question is, does that $400,000 mortgage fit into their budget? I would encourage them to make sure that principal, interest, taxes, and insurance is no more than 25% of their take-home pay. And if that's the case, then I think they could go ahead and buy it, and then they could refinance down the road if they need to. If they'd rather wait it out, I mean, they're throwing $1,400 a month away, and I don't know that they're going to benefit as much from that $1,400 a month in terms of waiting out the ability to buy it at lower interest rates. If they're going to, you know, spend $1,400 a month for the next 2 years, that's 24 months. That's a lot of money that they would, you know, be giving up versus getting, you know, more of that going into the equity right now. So I think they just need to think through this and determine why is it that we're doing this. And if it's just about the mortgage interest rate, then I'd probably go ahead and buy it and then look to refinance down the road. But if they really just want to save to get that ultimate purchase price down, or at least the amount that they have to mortgage lower, so it fits more closely into the budget and they really feel like this is the home for them, then I think it sounds like this could be a good option in the sense that they're getting that lease option. So they're not obligated. They could move on. They're continuing to build a little bit of the down payment and they get the ability to wait out the interest rates, which is probably sometime next year that we see rates down closer to where they were before all of this started with the interest rate hikes. Does that make sense?
That's perfect. Absolutely. That makes perfect sense. That's what I was wondering what you thought too about the interest rates, like what you thought the forecast was with those.
It's probably
next year,
halfway through next year or so. I mean, I think we'll start to see rates come down early in the year, but it could be next, you know, a year from the fall before we're starting to see rates down closer to where they would like them to be. We're not going to be back at 2.75% in the next 2 years, I don't think, but, you know, it'll be a little bit beyond that for sure.
Okay. Perfect. All right. Thank you. I appreciate everything you do.
Absolutely. That's Rhonda, we appreciate you calling. God bless you. Quickly to Texas. Hi, Peggy. Go ahead.
Hi. I just have a question. Almost every day I read about large banks that are closing. And then I also am following people that are going to their banks trying to draw out cash and being told that there's only a limit to how much they can withdraw within a certain time period. Well, this is, to me, is frightening. And so I'm just considering, because the money that I have in savings is the savings that they're giving me is practically nothing. If I wouldn't just be better off to try to get all the cash out and just put it in a safe deposit box. What do you think?
I wouldn't do that. That's not my preferred approach. There really shouldn't be a limit as to how much you can withdraw. I mean, that is set by the bank, but you could have that conversation when you walk in and visit with the bank. That's why I'd go with a large national bank. You know, in terms of bank failures or closings, I mean, we saw a bit of that earlier in the year with some very isolated regional banks that were either had mismanaged their portfolios in terms of the bonds that they were purchasing and how they were valuing those bonds. And then they were highly concentrated in one particular sector. In the case of Silicon Valley Bank, they were highly concentrated in a high growth sector that needed a lot of cash. And as they started to withdraw the money, they realized that they didn't have enough in the way of liquid reserves and they had not managed their investments properly. That was fairly isolated. There's not a systemic problem here. In fact, we're much better off than we were in 08 and 09 as a result of the reserve requirements coming out of the financial crisis during that time. So I think the backing of the full faith and credit of the United States government, despite the fact that I would like to see us make some changes on a macro basis in terms of our economy here in this country, I don't think we have any major problems on the horizon anytime soon. And I'd rather have you keep your money in the bank with FDIC insurance versus you having it in cash and losing that purchasing power every month because of inflation. That's just my take on it. But I think you need to pray through it and make that call yourself, Peggy. But I appreciate your call today. Thanks very much. Donald, I know you had a comment. You had a great experience with CarShield, which goes to our earlier question. Sorry we didn't get to your call, but if you call back, we'd love to put you on the air tomorrow. Folks, thanks for being along with us today. Grateful for Robert Sutherland, Devin Patrick, and Pat Montague, my amazing team making this program happen every day. You have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.